I think truly there is a situation where human beings have no other reason but to be family. And that's the only word. It shouldn't depend on bloodline or on being straight and officially okayed by religion or by civil law. It is human beings making contact when it matters.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A judge aborts Argentina's first same-gender marriage. U.S. evangelicals inspire hateful Uganda laws, but a gay Asian Canadian writer loves extended families. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the 2 weeks ending December 5th, 2009. The gay couple who expected to marry in Buenos Aires this week became the victims of cold feet, but not theirs. Judge Marta Gomez Alsina overturned the mid-November decision of Judge Gabriela Cejas, who had ruled that denying marriage to Alejandro Freire and José María de Bello violated Argentina's constitution. In this week's ruling, Judge Alsina said the issue should be decided by the country's Supreme Court. The High Court was already considering a marriage equality case filed by another couple, and one of the justices, Carlos Feit, told reporters this week that they will issue a ruling in that case, although he provided no further details. Buenos Aires Mayor Mauricio Macri, who may be a presidential candidate in 2011, had welcomed the original decision. But he said this week that even though he supports the couple, Judge Alsina's ruling prevented him from legally authorizing the marriage. Freire and Di Bello, along with hundreds of supporters, demonstrated at the civil registry office for 3 hours, demanding that the couple be married. They vowed to continue the legal battle because, as Di Bello told the crowd, "We want everyone who loves each other to have the same rights." Both men are HIV positive, work in AIDS prevention organizations, and had purposely chosen December 1st, World AIDS Day, as the date of their wedding.
The United Nations Joint Program on HIV/AIDS, UNAIDS, released a statement on the 21st annual World AIDS Day, calling for countries to stop criminalizing LGBT people. It noted that 80 nations still outlaw gay sex, which, the statement said, not only violates human rights, but also undermines effective HIV prevention and treatment. According to the latest estimate from UNAIDS, there are 33 million people around the world now living with HIV. There were 2.7 million new infections in 2008 and 2 million deaths.
In an announcement that appeared to be a bold idea in HIV prevention, Chinese officials said this week that the government would open its first gay bar in Dali, a tourist town in the southwestern province of Yunnan, on World AIDS Day. They said it would provide a safe haven for gay men to congregate and get HIV/AIDS prevention information. The scheduled grand opening drew several journalists and photographers. Volunteers decided to delay the event because, not surprisingly, virtually no one would show up under the media glare. Shangzhen Bo, founder of the group behind the initiative, told reporters that potential customers would be scared that their identity would be revealed, that it would lead to misunderstanding and changes in their lives.
But the International AIDS Society announced this week that the 19th International AIDS Conference has been scheduled in 2012 for Washington, D.C. It will be the first time since 1990 that the global meeting will be held in the United States. The last one was in San Francisco. The announcement followed the recent action by the Obama administration to rescind the long-standing U.S. travel and immigration ban on people living with HIV.
The World AIDS Day statement issued by UNAIDS also singled out Uganda for special attention. While same-gender sex is already outlawed in the East African nation, new legislation is likely to pass there that increases the penalty for consensual adult gay sex to life in prison, calls for death by hanging for offenders who are HIV positive, and jails people who voice support for LGBT rights or fail to report individuals in their communities whom they believe to be gay. Both British Prime Minister Gordon Brown and Canadian PM Stephen Harper have publicly condemned the draconian measures. Swedish officials threatened this week to pull the country's millions of dollars in aid to Uganda if the laws pass. The U.S. State Department has indirectly condemned the proposals, and Anglican Archbishop of Canterbury Rowan Williams is said to be quietly lobbying the Ugandan government behind the scenes. There were reports this week describing strong links between a U.S. evangelical Christian political group known as The Family and the proposed legislation in Uganda. We'll have more about that in a special report following NewsWrap.
As we record this newscast, the dust has yet to settle down under over the Australian Capital Territory's passage of a measure to create legally binding same-gender civil union ceremonies. The federal government can overturn territorial legislation, as it did twice before when the ACT passed similar bills, claiming that each measure too closely mimicked marriage and contravened Australian law defining that institution as exclusively heterosexual. ACT Attorney General Simon Corbell has reportedly been negotiating some amendments to the current legislation with representatives of Prime Minister Kevin Rudd's Labour administration to make the measure acceptable to the federal government. But members of the Green Party, which sponsored the civil union law in the ACT legislature, have expressed a reluctance to approve what they fear will be a watered-down version of the bill. Meanwhile, thousands marched in support of marriage equality across Australia on November 28th, including large gatherings in Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, the ACT, Adelaide, and Lismore. They were also protesting the conclusions of the long-awaited report by a Senate committee of inquiry that had solicited public comment about a proposed federal same-gender marriage bill. The committee recommended against its passage.
Elsewhere, the Irish Parliament opened debate this week on a bill to grant limited but significant rights to same-gender couples. While it's in many ways historic for the socially conservative, heavily Roman Catholic country, critics complain that the civil partnership bill would create a second-class status for gay and lesbian relationships and deny them important rights given to heterosexual married couples, especially in family law.
The New York State Senate defeated a marriage equality bill this week by an unexpectedly wide margin. The vote was 24 in favor and 38 against, with 8 Democrats joining all of the Republicans to defeat the measure. "Promises made were not honored," said the bill's author, Senator Tom Duane. "The LGBT community and all fair-minded New Yorkers have been betrayed," the Manhattan Democrat added. "I am enraged, deeply disappointed, and profoundly saddened by the vote." The bill passed the Assembly earlier this year. Governor David Paterson, a strong advocate for LGBT rights, had said he wanted to sign a marriage equality bill into law. Demonstrations have been held to protest the vote. Angry bloggers are also urging that Democrats who voted against marriage equality be targeted for defeat in the 2010 elections.
But the Washington, D.C. City Council, as expected, overwhelmingly approved a marriage equality bill this week in the first of 2 votes. Only 2 council members voted against the measure, Marion Barry and Yvette Alexander, while 11 were in favor. A second and final vote is scheduled later this month, and Mayor Adrian Fenty has promised to sign the measure into law. Federal lawmakers have oversight on district legislation, however, and it's uncertain if congressional Republicans will try to overturn the law.
Listing debts in the millions and no assets, Window Media and Unite Media, the parent companies of 5 U.S. LGBT publications, filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy in late November. Window owned and operated the Washington Blade and the Atlanta, Georgia-based Southern Voice, 2 of the nation's oldest and most prestigious LGBT newspapers. Unite owned and operated 2 gay publications in Florida and 1 in Atlanta. The offices of all 5 were shuttered without prior notice to employees on November 16th. The Avalon Equity Fund, a small business investment company that was licensed by the Federal Small Business Administration in 2000, owned both businesses. It had borrowed $39 million from the SBA since then and was forced into receivership last year after it violated its contract with the agency. Claims and counterclaims by company executives, employees, and the openly gay owner of a Virginia newspaper chain who said he'd offered to buy at least one of the newspapers, along with seemingly conflicting statements from the SBA, have clouded a full explanation of what happened prior to the bankruptcy declaration. Staff at the Washington Blade vowed to keep the paper's 40-year-old legacy alive in a reborn publication. They issued the first edition of their D.C. agenda last week. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution reported last week that a foundation has offered a matching grant to help create a new publication to succeed the Southern Voice.
Three queer candidates made U.S. electoral history this week. Simone Bell won a runoff to represent an Atlanta district in the Georgia State Assembly, becoming the country's first openly lesbian African-American state legislator. Atlanta voters also elected Alex Wan as the first gay man and first Asian-American to serve on the city council. And 26-year-old Evan Lowe was elected by his fellow city council members in the Northern California town of Campbell, a suburb of San Jose, to become one of the few openly gay and one of the youngest Asian American mayors in the country.
And finally, queer actor Alan Cumming and activist Ben Summerskill, who leads the UK's LGBT advocacy group Stonewall, were each named an Officer of the Order of the British Empire last week by Princess Anne in ceremonies at Buckingham Palace. The OBE is one step below knighthood, so they can't be referred to as Sir. But Summerskill told reporters that, "I meet a lot of queens every day, so it was a nice change to meet a princess."
That's News Wrap for the 2 weeks ending December 5th, 2009, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. You can read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
Gay Asian Canadian writer Wason Choi discusses the love of extended families, Santa Claus, and his memoir, Not Yet, later in the program. But first, another type of extended family has been in the news lately. Uganda President Yoweri Museveni claims that Europeans are trying to import homosexuality into his country. But some evangelical Christians in the U.S. have, in fact, been importing homophobia into that East African nation. Openly lesbian news commentator Rachel Maddow detailed those connections on her MSNBC cable show this week.
The government of Uganda is considering passing a law to execute gay people. Execute as in by hanging a, quote, serial offender or an HIV-positive person who commits same-sex acts. If enacted, this law would also impose a 3-year prison sentence on anyone who knows of a gay person in the country but doesn't report that gay person to the government within 24 hours. Who is supporting and promoting this legislation? In a moment, we'll speak with Jeff Charlotte, who's written extensively about the secretive evangelical religious organization called The Family. We first started discussing The Family on this show when it emerged as a player in not two, but three Republican sex scandals. Those of South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford, Nevada Senator John Ensign, and the alleged sex scandal involving former Mississippi Congressman Chip Pickering. The Family, among other things, provides well below market rent housing for a select group of members of Congress at its, until recently, nearly tax-exempt church on Capitol Hill, a house called C Street. Jeff Charlotte is now reporting that the president of Uganda and the legislator who introduced the Kill the Gays bill are both members of The Family. Joining us now is Jeff Charlotte, author of The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power. He's also a contributing editor to Harper's Magazine. So who introduced the Kill the Gays bill, and what's his connection to The Family?
It's a member of parliament named David Bahati, who's been very involved with a sort of conservative evangelical revival in Uganda, very involved with a lot of American evangelical groups, and has also taken a leadership role in the family's Uganda operation through something called the African Student Leadership Program and through Uganda's National Prayer Breakfast, which is an offshoot of the prayer breakfast the family hosts every year here in the United States.
In the big picture, why is The Family interested in Uganda? Why are they interested in operating there, and what are their goals there?
Well, the family has always viewed its religious outreach, its worldwide spiritual offensive, as they describe it, in very clear geopolitical terms. Uganda right now is an incredibly important country for world politics. It's functioning in many ways as a U.S. proxy with Sudan, with Congo, with Rwanda. There's oil in that general region, and the family needs to have a presence out there. They've had that presence in Uganda since 1986, when they sent over a man to recruit Museveni, who was then the new leader, then looked like a bright democratic spot in African leadership, and they recruited him to be one of their main brothers, as they put it, for the whole continent.
So President Museveni in Uganda, he's not explicitly backing this horrendous bill, but it is thought that he tacitly supports it, at least as far as I can tell.
It's hard to call it passive support when he's coming out there and saying that homosexuality is a plot that's sort of being imposed on Africa by Egypt and that, or I'm sorry, but by Europe, and that that this is a time for Africans to rally together against the sort of the foreign influence of homosexuality. And just last week, in fact, Museveni responded to questions from Uganda's main newspaper, is he a part of the family? And his press secretary said, well, I can't answer that, but it certainly sounds like an organization the president would like to be a part of, but only if they really, really hate homosexuals.
Wow. Jeff Charlotte is author of The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power. Thanks, as always, for joining us, Jeff. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Rachel.
You can watch The Rachel Maddow Show online at MSNBC.com.
Hello, I'm Carol.
And I'm Maria.
And together we're Zrazy.
And we're crazy about This Way Out,
the international lesbian and gay radio magazine.
It's that time of year again when many of you in the U.S. consider ways to maximize your annual charitable tax deductions. Unlike many other worthwhile causes, we can't survive without your help. Log on to thiswayout.org to get some unique musical, cultural, and historical programming from the This Way Out archives. No matter where you are in the world, we can't go on without you. Log on to thiswayout.org to help keep this program on the air. From the This Way Out family to you and yours, thank you and happy holidays.
As a gay man, I'm also a minority in a Caucasian gay culture. So I just thought so many things are not yet. I've almost died twice. What does it mean?
Last time on This Way Out, gay Asian Canadian writer Weisen Choi described his two near-fatal heart attacks and the friendships that bolstered his recovery, all of which inspired his new memoir, Not Yet. In this week's conclusion of a reflective conversation with our Brisbane correspondent John Frame, the now 70-year-old writer expands on his definition of family and blames Santa Claus for his collections obsession.
Certainly when you're at my age, at the what I call the other end of the rainbow, you have to really accept something about your life that made sense of your life. I'm not religious. When I wrote this book, I thought, well, what do I have to say? And Oprah won't phone because, you know, I didn't have a great conversion to this, that, or whatever. I was a sinner and now I'm a saint. That would never happen. So all I knew was I wanted to write this book just to understand what it is to be oneself, and above all, to discover that family is who loves you. During the AIDS crisis in Canada, as in the United States, many AIDS victims, I call them, because simply, who can say who was lucky or unlucky? But if you were unlucky, sometimes during that panic of that illness, people deserted you, friends couldn't go near you, family might even drop you. But then there were those who came to be with you. I've spoken about this because as a gay man, I think I want all of us who have unique relationships that are deeply, deeply meaningful to us, we should realize, as I realize, that's not for everybody maybe, but family is who loves you. And I remember being beside some of the patients who were thinking they were deserted and alone. I realized I couldn't be anywhere but with them. And I sometimes said, you know, I know you're going through a difficult time, but I want to be with you. I want to be here. I like to think I'm family. And sometimes the tears would flow. Sometimes, I don't know what the feeling was, but it made me feel we had the right to call each other who we were when we needed each other, which was family. And it's not simply to just make it sweeter. I think truly there is a situation where human beings have no other reason but to be family. And that's the only word. It shouldn't depend on bloodline or on being straight and logically, you know, officially okayed by religion or by civil law. It is human beings making contact when it matters. And I think my book then is a love story. When I was in the hospital, many people signed up to come and see me. They're allowed to come into the ICU if they're family. I had so many people come, including my extended family members, and only two of them were Asian. And I remember one of the nurses were cutting back the numbers because it was getting a bit much, and they had to, and I understood that. So I gave them the names of the people that were, you know, living with me. And then she said, but, you know, they all call themselves family, and there's only two of them that look Asian, Mr. Choi. And I said, oh, really? Well, you know, I hope you don't mind, but they all look Asian to me. And she laughed, and she said, I get it. And I said, yes, they're family. Yeah. Yeah, it was a very lovely moment.
Now, there's one element that it's a repeat topic on the Oprah program, is yes. decluttering so that you can get on with your life. Now, for yourself, now I do this, my room is overburdened with things that...
I know.
But you write on page 93, you say, abundance means... potential?
Yes, potential, possibility. I used to think that I must be obsessive compulsive. I have to admit, one of my friends says to people that know me, I love the first 10 of everything Wason has. But I find things, I'm a stationary freak for one thing. I find that I'll be writing letters on this. I can see me using the envelopes. I can see me licking the beautiful stamps I collect. The pens I will write with, and so on and so forth. And my accumulation has to do with the idea when Santa Claus, I blame Santa Claus, by the way, it's a good one to blame, because I never had Santa Claus until my mother and father, who were directly from China, lived with my modern aunt and uncle. And they decided to treat me to the idea of Santa Claus. And one day when I was almost 6 years old, we had Christmas. And I woke up, I didn't know what Christmas was, I just knew Christmas was, you know, because every time I got a present, my mother would open it right away. We just opened the presents as they arrived. Well, we did a little bit of that, but suddenly one day I woke up and there was everything I had thought I would like for Christmas or for a toy that I had talked about, everything. Wagons and mechanical sets and this and that game and cowboy outfit. I thought, this is wonderful. I have options. I will always have this. So I've taught some of my godchildren this. The parents blame me. I always say to them when they go out and say, no, you want to take 3 books. You just want to take 1 book. You want options. What if you got bored with that one? Take 3, take a half a dozen. You know, you want to take some toys. Oh, here's a bag for you. Here, carry 5 of them and 6 of them and... I don't see why not. Yeah. You can't have it all, but it's time that you got as much as possible. You know, it's like eating great food, and people always say, oh, I'm on a diet, and I always say to them, please, you know, you're going to be thin forever. Enjoy. Of course, I went overboard, and I had my heart attacks because it was probably bad diet, bad living habits, but a good time.
Mm-hmm. Now, The cover of Not Yet features a hummingbird, and that's yes. significant because this is the very closing scene of the book.
Yes.
And yet, what is observed with the hummingbird, there's a hummingbird who tries to attack its own reflection and collapses, but the instruction is, no, don't try to pick it up. Don't help.
No. Give it a chance to find its own consciousness. I think that's what it meant. I didn't understand it symbolically. I just wrote it, actually, because it came to me as a very moving image when I was recovering with my goddaughter in Arizona. She's a nurse in Arizona. And it was just incredible. I was sitting in her backyard in the comfortable chair, and suddenly I heard this beating, 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 beating. It was a buzz beat, and it was like when I had my heart attack. And I felt it, and I began to panic. I thought, oh, no, I'm having another. But Then my goddaughter came to the veranda and she saw me looking absolutely confused. And she said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. I think I'm having a, but listen, can you hear this?" And it dawned on me. And she said, "Turn around slowly." And I turned around and there was a hummingbird sort of buzzing towards me and back towards me and back. And apparently I had moved my chair right underneath the feeding stall that she had for the hummingbirds, this little thing filled with honey liquid. And so she said, "Just move away slowly." And I did. And then it just flew up and went on about its business. And I was dazzled. And suddenly its mate was attacking the glass doors on the veranda. And it smashed into itself, its own image, and collapsed. And I was going, "Oh my gosh," and I wanted to pick it up. And my goddaughter said, no, don't. Leave it alone because you don't want to touch it. It'll be okay. If it's okay, it'll be okay. If it's not, then we'll have to do something. And we waited a few moments, and it kind of buzzed around, shook itself up, hopped, and then went up into the air, looked around to see if he was okay, I guess, I don't know, and then flew back to be with its mate. And so I thought to myself, yeah, I've had a bump, and I've smashed, and I'm up, and hummingbirds seem to disobey the rules of flight, because until we understood how that worked, you know, in terms of physics, it was always amazing to see them go up, down, sideways, however they do it. And I thought, that's like my life. That's like my life. It's like love itself, too. You have a crash now and then, and you better just pick yourself up, and you surely learn something. And in the end, that image came to me, and I realized that we're still in flight. I'm okay. I'm in flight.
It's been lovely chatting with you, Wason Choi, author of Not Yet, here at the Brisbane Writers' Festival.
Thank you for having me.
This has been John Frame for This Way Out.
This Way Out has a gift for you, and it's coming just in time for the holidays.
From a classically trained balladeer to a duo featuring a transgendered frontman.
The heaven dogs got the old show blue.
To a venerable gay punk rock band. Audiophile featured a wide variety of music and musicians in 2009. Hi, I'm Christopher David Trentum. J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and I feature our top 8 picks of the year on our annual half-hour Audiophile Year in Review, the week of December 21st, here on This Way Out.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Christopher Gall, Michael LeBeau, Tanya Kane Perry, John Frame, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible only by donations from our listeners, and we thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to support our work, listen to our podcasts, read this week's news wrap, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alert, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KALW San Francisco, California, 7LTN Launceston, Tasmania, WZKW Kingsville, Ohio, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.